Hi, Yidon Rothstein here with a response of the day for the sixth day of Adar. And today we're going to see a topic that we saw once before, but from a very different perspective. The question, fundamentally, the question is whether or not you have to tovel certain pots and pans. So we once saw Tzitzeliezer together about toveling, about immersing in a mikvah plastic utensils, because the question was, does plastic qualify as a material that needs immersion? There are some, particularly, let's say, metal. There are some pots and pans and utensils that the Torah says that when we take them from non-Jews, we have to tovel them. Now, toveling them, immersing them in the mikvah, has nothing to do with making them kosher in terms of the worry about that they might have absorbed prohibited items. It's just the halacha that we have to tovel things. So, Yabia Omer, should Yabia Omer respond some, Yabia Omer provide you a safe, the 10th volume, Yaredeya, in the Yaredeya section, in response to number 10, 10 your day at 10, from the 6th of Adar of Tav Shin Ka Samach Gimel of 2003, which I think is a new winner for latest, most recent response that we have studied in this context together. And that reminds me that the one who pointed out to me the dates was David Hachhauser. So let's remember to thank David Hachhauser, Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz, and the OU for their participation in hosting these shiurim for your listening pleasure. So Rav Yosef is writing to, this is a very old Rav Yosef, he's 83 years old, and thank God for all of us, he seems to be completely, fully in control of his faculties. He writes that, he's writing to comment on a sefer that this Rav from Gilo had written called Ohel Moshe, about the laws of immersing kelim, immersing, you know, bowls, pots, pans, whatever it is that we have to immerse, dishes, clay achila, things that we eat from. So he says there that plastic, he also says nylon, and I don't know what things you make out of nylon. You can make packaging out of nylon, but I don't know what he means by nylons that you would have to tovel. But in any case, this Ravid Paskind, that it was proper to be stringent about the issue and to tovel them below bracha, without making a bracha. And then he mentions this Rav in his Sefer Kotel Moshe, mentioned that Rav Yosef and Yabia Omer, in the fourth volume of Yabia Omer, had ruled that there was no need to tovel these things, that you didn't have to tovel them, even though Chazal and Avodah Zarah, Ayin Hamid Beis, made a gzeira that we should tovel glass utensils, which are not included in the Torah's requirement to tovel things. And the reason they had said that was that glass, if it breaks, you can fix it relatively, comparatively easy compared to clay, which you couldn't fix. So therefore, that they decided to treat them as clay matchot, as if they were akin to or similar to metal. And that's why you had to tovel them. That's why you had to immerse them in a mikvah before a Jew uses them. Nonetheless, plastic or nylon, which didn't exist in the time of Chazal, this is what Rav Yosef had written in volume 4. Since they didn't exist in the time of Chazal, and therefore they weren't included in the Gezerah, they weren't included in the decree, Rav Yosef's position was, and is, it'll continue to be, Ain't anu yecholim, we can't make new Gezerot, even if, and then he quotes Melamed Lahoel, which is the response of David Zvi Hoffman, who says the same, has a similar argument about clay etzem, like bone, the pots, pans, plates, dishes, china made out of bone. So I don't know if bone china is actually made out of real bone, but that was Rav Yosef Hoffman's point, was that it's not a material that was used at the time of Chazal. If it's not a material that was used at the time of Chazal, we don't expand their gezerot. Now, before we even go on, and that's what he holds. And he quotes Yerushalmi, that we don't add to gezerot. Then he quotes Rav Yosef Chaim, which is the Ben Ish Chai, who says, Shafilu davar chadash, hadomem mamash ledavar shinidon alav chazal, shagazur alav chazal. You find something new, it's clearly new, but it's also very, very similar to what Chazal made a gzera on. We don't do that. Even if we're confident, this is what Rav Yosef Chaim had written. Rav Yosef Chaim Ben Ish Chai was generally a pretty stringent authority. His perspective halacha generally came up pretty stringent. But here he's saying, even if it's something that we're confident that had it been around at their time, they would have included the gzera. We do not add to gzera. Generally, gzor isur achar chitiman haTalmud. We don't make new gzera. We don't make new decrees after the Talmud was finished. And therefore, the only things that we include as included in a gzera, in a rule, in a prohibition, or a decree of any sort, are those things which they include in the decree themselves. Now, before I go on with the tshuva, and I'll get back to it in one second, I just want to point out that theoretically, if you applied that to other things, would have far-reaching ramifications. I've thought this often, this is me talking, and I apologize for my digressions. If you don't like them, my email is grothst@gmail.com. Just say, hey, please stop with the digressions. We don't like them. Somebody, I just saw somebody recently who said to me, you know, you talk too fast on the tape. And the answer was, I often talk too quickly. And I just have to learn not to speak so quickly. And that's my problem, my issue. And I work on it, not constantly and not with all that much success, but I do work on it. So in any case, I would just point out that that seems to me to raise huge issues about, the example comes to my mind about kitniot. Because kitniot is a practice which has been clearly greatly expanded since the time that it evolved. Now, it evolved as a minhag, so perhaps one could argue that there, Rav Avadya Yosef would agree, and all those with him would agree that you can expand the minhag because it was just a minhag to begin with. But I think that if you look back in the original source of the 1200s, 1300s, when kitniot became an issue, many of them treated it like it's a gzerah. So again, you could argue, well, gzerot that happened, that started after the time of the Talmud, we're allowed to add to it, but that would be an odd thing. It would mean that Chazal's power of the time of the Talmud to create a gzerah, that was limited to what they said to decree on, and we don't add on to it at all. But the power of the people in the 1200s to make a gezerah, that we add on to all the time, and we add on because we assume they would have. Meaning, it's not that we add on because we decide that we think it's important to add on. That would not surprise me. It wouldn't even bother me. That would be us making a gezerah. But when it comes to a practice like, and there are other examples, it's just one that's coming to my mind, but it comes to a practice like kitniot, when you come, and the example that comes to my mind, because I think it's first of all a clear example, and second, a one that affects our practice of kitniot much more than you realize. You come to a new crop like corn, which I don't think Europeans came across, or Jews basically came across till like the 1700s, and they immediately assume that it's part of kitniot, and that seems to me to be adding to a gzerah. So you say, well, it's just a custom, so then it's adding to a custom, but it's adding to a custom not because they decided to, it's because they assumed that the custom spread. So I think this is a far-reaching comment by Rav Avadya Yosef. It's a far-reaching idea. And he's holding it as a halachic idea. He's holding there's no reason to tovel these things because they are new materials and they were not included by Chazal. And then this rabbi from Gilo, who had published a sefer, had relied on a psak, a ruling of the Minchat Yitzchak. Minchat Yitzchak was a Rosh Yeshiva in Munkach. He was dying in Romania. He was the head of a Beis Din in Manchester from 1948 till 1970, then moved to Eretz Yisrael, became the head of the Beis Din of the Eda HaCharedis. So he's an important posek, the Minchas Yitzchak, and this Rav quotes or cites the Minchas Yitzchak as support for his claim that you should tovel it without a bracha just in case. But Rav Yosef says, that's very nice for you, except that the Minchat Yitzchak in a later volume, in volume 4, after he saw my tshuva in Yabia Omer volume 4, copied everything that I had written, and he said, yeah, you don't have to. So in other words, he agreed with me. At first he posited like you're saying, but then he saw my reasoning and he agreed with it and he accepted it. So too, he quotes other shivot, and then when he comes to the Tzitzit Ezra to quote him, and that's the shivot that we had seen about plastic and nylon, that they don't need a tefillah, and that's why we should posken. He calls him Rav Achai Gaon. So Rav Achai Gaon, so Achai is first of all the name of an original Gaon, of the author of the She'iltot. So it could just be a way of honoring him and speaking about him as being a really sort of like almost a throwback to the great Gaonic period. But I think it also means my brother, meaning my colleague and my beloved friend, because they were really very, very close. In any case, so everybody seems to agree that everybody, but he's quoting many, many authorities who agree that when it comes to plastic, since plastic was not a material that existed in the time of Chazal, and they didn't make the gzeira to apply to that, we do not extend that gzeira. That's issue number one that he takes with this sefer. Issue number two is, this Rav had Paskin had ruled that if a kli, if a pot, a pan, a knife, a dish, whatever it is you'd have to be tovel, had not yet been toveled. So until you tovel something, you're not supposed to use it. It's sort of usher to use it, it's sort of prohibited to use it. So let's get mixed up with the majority, even just two other items that had tefillah, that had been immersed. So this man ruled that you tovel, that you immerse all three items in the mikvah, and you make a bracha. Now the bracha really is going on the one that wasn't immersed, but it assumes, therefore, that the one that wasn't immersed has not become batel, doesn't become nullified or erased. Meaning, in general, in halacha, when something mixes with a mixture, other than taste dishes, when something mixes in a mixture with a majority, is okay, and this is not okay. So in general, we would say that one goes away. It's like we don't know which one it is, and therefore we can ignore it. Basically, it becomes nullified, it becomes batel. If it becomes batel, you could have imagined saying that you don't need to immerse it at all. And certainly, if you're going to immerse it, it's only for the sake of immersing it, or it's only because of a rabbinic issue, and you wouldn't make a bracha on it. But he's holding, you immerse it, and you make a bracha. And his source is a Dayak Yeshuva in the name of Ruach Chaim. But Ruach Chaim is a sefer by Ruach Chaim Falaji. Ravad Yosef says, if you look up the Ruach Chaim and what he talked about, he says, the reason is that even though generally we say, as I said before, that one in two is a mixture, is batel, here, he says, Kevan Deleka Pseida, there's nothing lost by immersing all three. What's the big deal about Valachlishtam? Chashiv Davashlo Matirim de Lobatil. So it gets us into another halachic principle of what's called the Davashlo Matishlo Matirim. Davashlo Matirim is something which I have it in a mixture, and right now it seems to be prohibited to use it, but it will one day be permissible to use, and therefore, the halacha often says, so why would you use it now? Why would you allow it to become butta? Why would you rely on the fact that it becomes nullified in the mixture? Right? That's an allowance of pretending, of ignoring something. Right? Let's say, you know, I have a piece of meat that's a piece of pig meat, and it mixes in with five other pieces of meat. Let's assume they're indistinguishable, so I can't tell which is which. So there, if we don't apply the issues of the ideas of bitul, of nullification, all the meat's going to become problematic, because I don't know which one is the prohibited meat. There's nothing I can do about it. That's where bitul comes in. But if the item that we're talking about is going to become mutter at some point, so let's say there's chametz that belongs to a non-Jew, right? It's on Pesach, and it gets mixed in somehow with my non-chametz material. So it happens to be, it's a bad example, because we say there's no such thing as bitul when it comes to chametz, so that's a bad example. But for the davashish material aspect, my point would have been, let's say this is the seventh or eighth day of Pesach, and the next day it's going to become mutter. That would be a davashish lo matirin. So it's a davashish matirin, and therefore it's not batel. So that's what Chaim Volozhin had said. That was his reasoning for why you should tovel all three and not rely on bitul. So the Ravai Yosef says, it's an interesting idea, but there's a tzlach, which is written by the Noda Behuda. So the Noda Behuda in a different hat is the tzlach. The tzlach on Pesachim comments that takes us in a different direction. He says, when we say devastation material, that it's not batel, that no matter how big a mixture, if you can just wait, it's going to become heter, or there's a way to make it heter, then there's no reason to allow ourselves to rely on bitul. So the Noda Behuda says, Hainu dafka le'inyan isur achila. That's only in terms of eating, because you can say you're going to ingest something. Why ingest it now into your body when it's prohibited? Ingest it when it's permissible, and the ingesting is a one-time act anyway. I'm either going to have this cake now, or I'm going to have this cake later. But, come on, I set it up so well. You can't eat your cake and have it too, which is actually the right way to say that phrase. Right? So, the point that none of you are saying is, when we say, use it beheter, use it permissibly rather than prohibitively, that's because there's no loss whatsoever. Why is there no loss whatsoever? We're assuming it doesn't go bad in the time it'll take for it to become permissible, and then you'll eat it. And there was always going to be only one act of eating ever. But when it comes to pots and pans and items, utensils like that, I can use it today, I can use it tomorrow, I can use it the next day. So if you tell me to wait till it becomes heter, says the Noda Behuda, says the tzlach, you tell me to wait till it becomes heter, you're losing me. That halacha, that idea, is losing me today's use. I have to wait till it becomes heter. I have to wait till it becomes permissible. And that's not the principle of davashish material. Davashish material was, since it's not costing you anything to cook and eat this meat today, cook and eat this meat tomorrow, it's not a significant difference. I find other meat, but it's not a significant difference to wait for it to become heter, so I might as well wait for it to become permissible. But when it comes to utensils, it is costing me something. So that cost, says the tzlach, is enough that when it comes to utensils, we would in fact say, but bitul berov, we would say it becomes nullified by the majority, becomes overwhelmed by the majority around that it's mutter. We do not have to wait until it becomes etter. That's his reason. So clearly, the Rav Chaim Falaji disagreed. They saw it differently. That's the question of, in the principle of davashish no matirin, when Chazal said that if something's going to become mutter, you shouldn't use it be'isser, did they mean that's only true when there's no cost to you whatsoever of doing so? Or do they mean it even when there's some cost, the cost of having to wait, to use this item. So in food, it's clear there's no cost because you're going to eat or not. And that, by the way, I think is true, that if the food's going to go bad before then it's not considered a Shishu Matir, because it's not ever going to be around for that. So if it's going to cost you something, then yes. But that's the opinion of Noda Buda, is that it's only when it doesn't cost you anything, and when the food, that's the case of it. And he writes that way in the Noda Buda itself, right? Not just in the Slach, he mentioned in the Noda Buda, which are his responsa. And that goes against it. It's a debate between the Ruach Chaim, Ruach Chaim Falaji, and the Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yosef says, and then I found so-and-so, the Shutlevush Mordechai, and others who ruled leniently, following the version of the Tzlap, the principle of Dovash Yishon Matirin, Afilu Be'elef Lo Batil, the principle that we don't nullify things in mixtures if they're going to become eventually permissible, only applies to food and other one-time use items, because there is where there's no loss in waiting. Then he points out that there's a Shit in the Marasham, who has a similar discussion and wonders whether we can rely on the Rebbe. His case was slightly different. It was somebody bought a glass utensil of some sort, a pot, a pan, a glass, a plate, whatever it is, and then forgets or isn't sure whether he immersed them or she immersed them in the mikvah. So this Shit Maharsham writes that according to the reasoning of the Tzlach, we shouldn't think of it as Davash Yishon Matirin, and therefore should be able to use it right away, because it's not a Davash Yishon Matirin. You could say, well, just take it to mikvah. That's the principle of Davash Yishon Matirin, but until you can take it to mikvah, we're denying you the use of it. And the Tzlach seems to say that that we don't apply that reasoning. But now the Maharsham points out there's a Tosfos that seems to disagree. In any case, so he concludes that it's best to tovel them, but without a bracha. This Ravid Paskin with a bracha, he's saying without a bracha because it might be a demonstration of material, and therefore it's better to tovel them, but we're not sure enough that we make a bracha because we have a general principle of safek brachot lahakel, that when it comes to brachot, we rule leniently, and we don't make brachot unless we're fairly confident that it's required bracha. Rav Sipas Frank had the same plaque as well, and that Ravai Yosef says that's the things the halacha is to tovel them, but without a bracha. Now, and then he says, with glass itself, as it happens, he thinks it might be a further leniency that maybe you don't have to tovel them at all, because if you're not sure, you might have tovel them, you're not sure if you tovel them. So since the original tefillah is derabanan, is rabbinic, and and we're not sure, we have a debate among authorities as to whether we count it as Dovash Yishon Matirin, it is a Sveika derabanan. It's a Sveik and a rabbinic issue. And when there's a Sveik and a rabbinic issue, we usually pass, we usually rule lakel. Now you'll say to me, you might think to yourself, well, just take it to mikvah, it's a big deal. So if it's not a big deal, that's probably a good answer. And then even if there's room to say you don't have to tovel at all, you might as well, because why not? But the question comes up where, let's say you need them and you can't go to mikvah for some reason right now and you want to use them. So then that's the issue of where Suffolk Brachol Lakel and Suffolk Drabbanon Lakel become relevant and important halachic principles for us, because they let us say that yes, in this situation, it'll be okay to use these glass utensils since you might have told them, and the tefillah was drabbanan to begin with, and there's a sveika d'dina. There is a doubt as to how we paskin halacha in terms of whether or not they're considered davar shishu matirin. They're considered items that you could be easily made into permissible. Therefore, he thinks that there's room to be lenient there. Rabbi Akiva Eger had said explicitly in a response to him as well, that when we have a debate about, we have a doubt about how to rule halakhically on a principle that's only, that's derabanan, we rule leniently, and we do it even, he says it, even on something that we are sure is a davash yishon matirin. If the issue that might make it currently prohibited is derabanan, and we have a suffix about whether that derabanan really applies, and whether or not there's really halakha derabanan, he thinks you can rule leniently because it's fake derabanan, we can paskin the kula. So too in the Avni Miluim, Shut Avni Miluim says the same thing. Others disagree. The Gaon Miluim Blin in Torah Chesed tried to disagree, not try to. He disagreed with Rabbi Akiva Eger. He thought he had arguments that disproved Rabbi Akiva Eger, Rashi and Eruvin. Others, the Maharsham cited that Tosfos in Yoma, he thought the other way. Yitzchak Chana and Spector and Shibir Yitzchak. Anyway, that's Ravad Yosef's classic style of learning. He'll go through all these shittim over and over and over again, fighting us more opinions on either side, pointing out there is a debate about this. And then he quotes at the end the Mishnah Lamelech. In the 10th chapter of Hilchos Mikvos, commenting on that, the Mishnah Lamelech says, even with a Davash Yishon Matirin, let's say it is a Davash Yishon Matirin, meaning it will one day become permissible, or we can easily make it permissible, and therefore you think that maybe we have to apply the principle, the idea, that we don't use it until we can make it permissible. He there says, however, too, like we've been saying until now, that's when it's a Saveg B'Mitzius. What we're worried about is what the reality is and what the case was, or what the events were. But where the issue at hand is, we're not sure what the halakha is, therefore he too says, even in a Davash Yishon Matirin, you can be Mekel. There's a Shakazaya that way, and a Pichadish that way, etc., etc. So that's the second issue that he takes issue. So issue number one was the plastic case, and that got us into the very important, broadly applicable question of when there is a Gezeira de Rabbanan, when there's a decree that Chazal made, and I suggest that it might be even for post-Chazal, but there was a decree that was made, do we apply that decree to new cases that come up? Even if those, and the answer was no, we do not, because if it's not part of the decree, it's not part of the decree. And Rabbi Yosef is clear that he doesn't mean because we can't know if they would have included it. He's happily saying, even if we're positive and correctly positive, they would have included in the original Gezeira, if it wasn't there at the time, it wasn't there at the time, and therefore it's not included in Gezeira. That was principle number one that we saw. The second issue that we're just finishing up now, so question number one was Gezeirot. And the issue, and again, Rav Yosef was not saying we doubt whether they would have done it. Even when we're positive they would have included had it been around, doesn't matter. It wasn't around. It's not part of the Gezeira. We don't extend Gezeirot. We don't extend the decrees of Chazal. Principle number one, very important. Principle number two, very important. The issue of Dovah Sheish L'Matirin, of how do we categorize that which is considered it will or could become Heter. If it will or could become permissible, don't use it when it's impermissible. How that affects mixtures. Whether that applies only to food, as the Tzlach, as the Noda Behuda said, because food is the kind of thing that if you use it Beheter, it's the exact same. If you use it when it's permissible, it's the exact same for you as in using it when it wasn't permissible, as opposed to pots and pans, where if you have to wait till it's permissible, you're losing the use all of that time, and therefore he held that it wasn't. That gets to the question of then once we have a debate, because Rav Chaim Falaji and those who were with him disagreed with this idea, and they thought, no, we have treated as a davar sheyesh l'matirin. You have a debate in halacha about a drabanan and how that it does or doesn't affect our right to paskin the kula, and that's the issue that we're talking about here. What kinds of davar sheyesh l'matirin? Also, you have the idea that maybe davar sheyesh l'matirin applies to questions of mitzius rather than halacha. So there's a debate in halacha goes through different categories. So that is the second discussion that Rav Yosef has with this man. And then the final one that he brings up is that this man had raised the idea that, let's suppose, and I remember somebody asking me about this years ago, and the answer is not what you might have thought it was. The question is, let's say before Pesach, somebody's going to sell their chametz. So not only do they want to sell their chametz, what about the chametz that is embedded in their dishes, pots, and pans? Right? We have this idea that taste gets absorbed into utensils, into pots, pans, dishes, knives, forks, or whatever. So when we, that of which we don't kosher for Pesach, and you're not required to kosher your pots, pans, and stuff like that for Pesach, that which we don't kosher for Pesach presumably has embedded in it the taste of chametz. And since we treat taste as an actual reality in halacha, you don't want to own that on Pesach. So many people thought what you do is, I think today the answer is, it's not in the tshuva here, but I think the answer is people like sell the taste in their pots and pans rather than the actual pots and pans. So the reason we're about to get to, theoretically you could have argued you don't even need to sell it because you don't really own that. So it's not an item that's out there that you can access in any meaningful way, but that's a different discussion. And that's not in our responsive. So let's stick with this question. He says, once you sell it, you don't, after Pesach, when you buy them back, need to retovel them. Theoretically, you've just sold your pot to a non-Jew. Now you're buying it back from a non-Jew. And believe me, you don't want halacha to be, no, the sale didn't go through. The sale went through. Now you're buying it back from a non-Jew. If I walked up to a non-Jew and I bought this pot from a non-Jew, that's where the halacha of tevilah comes into place. Of immersing it comes into play. So I'd have to immerse it. So why don't I have to immerse it here? So he passes, you don't have to immerse it, and he points to an Aruch HaShulchan, who also thinks you don't have to immerse it. Rav Yosef says that's very nice, but not everybody agrees with that Aruch HaShulchan, because Sofer thinks you do need tefillah, you do need to immerse it, and so to his grandson, the Shevet Sofer, quartered his grandfather that way, and others as well, some have, as a tradition, they'll go to the Vilna thought, so also the Sema thought that if you sell your chametz with the kelim before Pesach, you need to have tefillah. So there's lots and lots of authorities who think you do, and therefore Rav Avad Yosef thinks you have to do a tefillah without a bracha. So he ends up by saying he has more to say, but that's where he's going to stop for now. So those are three interesting ideas Rav Yosef teaches us for the sixth day of Adar Aleph that he, in 2003. Number one, he didn't think you had to tovel plastic. Number two, he didn't think you had to, if non-tovel items got mixed up, or doubtfully tovel, or you have doubtfully tovel items, he doesn't get to treat those as davar sheyesh matirin, because it's a debate, and it's figured the din, it's a doubt about the halacha, in a derabbanan, and therefore we can go lekula. You don't have to tovel them right away. It's not bad to tovel them. If you want to tovel them without a bracha, that's great. This man is possibly tovel them with a bracha because it was an absolute obligation, and that Rav Yosef disagrees with. You can tovel them without a bracha. He thought that's fine, but you could also use them, he seems to think, even without. And then he thought that if you sell your dishes to a non-Jew before Pesach to get rid of the chametz that's in them, then he thought you'd have to take them to mikvah afterwards as well, as if you had bought them to begin with from a non-Jew. So we have a little bit of extra time. Theoretically, I could just say, well, I've gone over so many times, I will stop here, but I don't want to, and I hope you don't want me to. If you do want me to, you're probably the type of person who's not listening right now, because if you didn't like listening, you wouldn't be here. So I want to do a very, very short tshuva, very short response of Shud Aseh Lecha Rav, Chaim David HaLevi. This is from Chelek Vav, from the sixth volume. A very short responsa, Simon Pei Dalit, number 84. He's responding to a letter from the 6th of Adar of 1984 of Tufshin. He writes Tufshin Dalit Mem, 1984, 5744. And the person writing him was in a yeshiva, and in one of the closets or one of the baths, probably like the medicine cabinet, the yeshiva or a closet, somebody's closet, there was a shaver that had been there for a bunch of years. Now, in an earlier volume of Aseh Lecha Rav, he had said that if you find clothing or books that had been used a lot, there he thought there was a good reason to believe that the owners had abandoned it. And therefore, if you find them, you can just take them or give them to whoever you want to, or do whatever you want with them, because you can assume that they were left. Meaning, every year in the yeshiva, there are people who leave for the year, and there are people who leave forever. So if you find things that they left behind, you don't know who it is, right? So when you leave stuff behind, you can imagine that it's abandoned, like it's been lost for a while, it's abandoned, it's been there for years, and you can just use it. But when it comes to a shaver, Rukhaim Devalevi doesn't think that you can assume that somebody gives a shaver. Those are expensive items. Back then, they were even more expensive than they are today. Yeah, so you can assume that you can't assume that you have to try to find the owner. So what you really should have done, and the part that was so interesting about the tshuva, is that he says at the end as well, is that he thinks the best way to return lost items in his time is to bring them to the police. And let the police have them, and the police have a big lost and found. People who know they lost an item will go to the police, and they come to you. You can say, well, I brought it to the police. So that would have been true at the moment when it was first lost. But now that it's been there for years, the guy's going to give up on it, so therefore he doesn't think you can, he's not going to know where it was. He might have not realized where he left it. He might not know to come back to the yeshiva. So he doesn't think bringing it to the police, or go to the police, he doesn't think going to the police is a good idea. Therefore, he thinks you should sell it and leave the money with the yeshiva's administration and let them keep a record of it. And if a guy comes and says it was my shaver, then you'll pay him back that money. But fundamentally, he thinks that in his times, that when it comes to lost items, bringing them to the police is the best idea, and that's the best way to return lost items to people. So we will end a little early today with one longer response and one shorter response for the sixth day of Adar. Rav Yosef about issues of immersing utensils, plastic ones, whether or not they're in mixtures, and things that we buy back from non-Jews after Pesach, or not, and Rav Chaim David HaLevi on how we properly and best return items that are lost to people in our times. Thank you to the OU, Rabbi Jacob Romans, David Hochhauser. Have a great day.